For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to the world's smartest podcast network.
When I go to Sacramento, I will pump up Sacramento.
Some say the news is fake. Others say it's real. These two don't have the time to check. Instead, Turner Sparks and Michael Ira Kaplan turn to comics stationed around the globe to be their eyewitness reporters so that you can know what's really going on. This is Lost in America.
All right, everybody, welcome to Lost in America, episode 311. My name's Turner Sparks.
I am Mordechai Ben Yehuda. Salam Aleichem, everybody.
Wow. You can find me at turnersparks.com, at Turner Sparks on Instagram. I'm putting up new videos all the time, new stand-up comedy videos. Here, watch me do stand-up. You can find Mordechai Ben Salam, Salam Alam Aleichem, at...
My dad, Yehuda.
Yehuda! At Cap'n America on all social media platforms. Cap'n NYC for your real estate needs. He's also a real estate broker, folks. You can find us at Lost in America Pod on Instagram. And subscribe. We want to welcome all of our new listeners. We've had the last few weeks, a ton of you joining. We went to number one in Ecuador last week, which, if you know, is famous. That's the country near the equator. That they're famous for the equator. Yeah. And they put us to number one. We've been in the top 10 the last week in Mongolia, in Uganda, Ukraine, I believe. We went to the top 10 in Ukraine, all sorts of countries around the world.
Peru.
Thank you.
I believe.
Oh, Peru, Belarus. How did I forget Belarus? Kenya. How did I forget Kenya? So that's all. Thank you for all the new listeners. Here's how you can help us. Go to iTunes and leave us a review and subscribe. 5-star rating and then write a review. The written reviews are what helps us the most. It helps other people to find us and tell all your friends. Hey, if you're in Peru, turn around, down, tell somebody, you know. If you're in Kenya, tell a friend.
Tell somebody.
If you're in Belarus, you're walking around Belarus, go, hey, guys, just put your ear pods, put your earbuds in someone's ear on the subway and force them to listen to our show. Today, we're talking about something that this could have ramifications for around the world. For the entire world. This is a potential deal for peace and partnership between Israel, Saudi Arabia, heard of them, and the United States of America. We have Mohammed Magdi joining us, our Middle Eastern correspondent, stand-up comedian Mohammed Magdi, originally from Egypt, currently lives in Hong Kong, tours around the world doing stand-up comedy. We'll be joining us in just a minute, Kaplan, to talk all about that and if this deal is going to get done and how it's going to get done and what the world looks like after it gets done. But before that, Kaplan, patreon.com/lostinamerica. If you are a fan of this show, we have all these new fans now. Subscribe, rate, review. Yes, do that all on iTunes. But also, throw us $5 a month. What's that? That's, come on. You're rich.
That's... Yeah, in $5, we got a lot of rich Ecuadorians. We know they've come in. They've got plenty of money. $5 American.
The who's who of Ecuador is listening to this right now. They all got cash to burn. $5. The dollar's worth nothing these days. Throw us $5. And $5 a month gets you, obviously, this show. It also gets you our weekly, we do a couple times a week, Lost in the Bunker show. It's just me and Kaplan talking about our lives. Last week, guess what happened? In Jersey City, New Jersey, I watched a guy pull a gun on a homeless dude.
Yes, you described in great detail. He was a witness to a near murder.
I was the first person on the scene. I was watching it as it was going down, but you will get that full story if you listen to Lost in the Bunker, only available Patreon. patreon.com/lostinamerica. $5 a month gets you that show. $10 gets you a t-shirt. $20 gets you an ad once a month right here on this show. If you own a bakery in Kenya, why not? We'll advertise it right here. $20 a month.
Advertise for any business.
All right, yeah. Kaplan. Now let's get to the show. What do you know? Okay, so this is a peace deal, or not a peace deal, excuse me. It's just more of like a partnership, right? They're proposing between Israel and Saudi Arabia, kind of being brokered or facilitated by the United States of America. This feels to me, before I let you jump in, feels to me like, remember when Hulk Hogan and Macho Man finally became partners? I looked it up, 1987.
Joe Biden.
They were enemies before this. They were enemies. It was either you were a Macho Man guy or you were a Hulkamaniac. And yeah. At some point in 87, they said, you know what? We got to take down Andre the Giant. They came together. They shook. They clasped hands. The world went bananas. We never thought it was going to happen. That's what's happening right now, or could potentially be happening in the next couple months. Go ahead.
So in your analogy, Joe Biden is Miss Elizabeth and Iran is Andre the Giant.
Iran is Andre the Giant. Yeah. And tell the people why this is all happening, because everyone hates Iran, I guess.
Well, yeah. So we should back up and just say that since Israel was founded in 1948, the entire Arab world was against Israel. This was kind of like a unifying thing. And then we talked about years ago, there were the Abraham.
Go ahead.
Yes. Well, no, then there were Abraham Accords, and that, you know, we discussed, that's when UAE and Bahrain and a few other countries made peace with Israel.
Jared Kushner like made kind of a peace in the Middle East.
Yeah, it seemed like a bit of a joke because it was these smaller countries and it was Jared Kushner and it was Trump. But now we got, like, you know, Biden's involved. We've got Saudi Arabia, who are kind of the biggest, you know, influence in the region. So it seems like a much bigger deal. And of course, yeah, as you mentioned, Iran is the big boogeyman that everyone hates. Like, your enemy is the enemy is my friend kind of deal.
Yes. All right. So joining us, and this is going to be a little different. This is more of a roundtable talk about this. We have our good friend.
Couldn't get any
Muhammad.
Saudi comedians, I guess.
Excuse me?
I guess there's no such thing as a Saudi comedian, as we were saying. No.
It's hard to find a Saudi Arabian comedian who will speak on the record about all this stuff. Yeah, so, yeah. We have Muhammad Magdi joining us. Muhammad, first Hello. Of all, welcome to the show. Second
you.
Of all, you can tell us how we did on that wrap up, but also on that recap. But also, I want to know, to start here, why? So what we're understanding is there's an issue. Saudi Arabia doesn't like Iran, and they say we don't like Iran so much that we're going to become partners with Israel. Now, Kaplan wants he's demanded for that the whole world, everyone hates Jewish people and everyone hates Israel. And I've said for years, I don't think that's true. I, not to offend, but I don't think that just, we don't spend all of, I don't spend as much time thinking about Israel and Jewish people as Kaplan hopes. But, and this is another point of proof for on my side that the world actually likes Jewish people. And he says, no, they don't, because my comedy is based on them not liking Jewish people. And I said, no, right. We do like you. And he said, don't tell anyone. So anyway, this is another point on my side. Saudi Arabia likes Israel more than Iran. How on earth is it possible that Saudi Arabia likes Israel more than Iran right now? Muhammad.
Well, Cap, first of all, just so you know, people might not like you as a person. Don't make it about
Oh, you had to say it that way.
Fair to the rest of
I like to have an excuse, though. I like to be able to blame my people.
But the whole Saudi-Iran thing is simply just a religious fact. Like, factors? Like, whatever. The
factions.
Yeah. Yeah, so basically Saudi is like the Mecca, the literal Mecca for the Muslim, for the Sunni people, and Shia and Iran is the other capital for the Shia people. And they have influence, like the Shia people are in Iran, and they're in Iraq a little bit, and Syria and stuff like that. And that's actually, Hezbollah is all Shia, for example, and that's what a very strong segment of the Shia people outside of Iran. And so yeah, you can just, if you want to simplify it, it's basically just like Sunni versus Shia thing. Yeah. And so then obviously you can add the oil layer, Which is, you know, Iran and Saudi are both very rich in oil. So that's where the West come in and try to democratize countries.
Yes, the oil is, as Turner was saying to me off air, electric cars stink. So the Saudi Arabia is going to be valuable for a long time.
Yeah. So is oil exactly. really, is oil the thing? I rented an electric car on accident in Dallas last weekend. I was doing comedy there. I just wanted a car, but they gave me the manager special, which they don't tell you. It's like a surprise car, but it's $10 cheaper. But when you get there, you get a surprise car. It turned out the surprise was that it was 100% electric. And then the people at the rental car company at Thrifty Rental Car, they were like, oh no, it's easy. You're going to be able to use it. Don't worry about it. Just, and they like blah, blah, blah through it. They went yada, yada, yada. It's fine. You're fine. Go ahead. Cut to like the next day, I'm trying to return the car at 2 a.m. the night before. I'm driving all around Dallas trying to find an electric car charging station.
Charging point.
I finally find one like way out in the middle of Fort Worth, Texas. I'm way out in the middle of nowhere. And it's 6 hours. It's like going to the gas station.
The Tesla?
Well, you just sit there from 2 a.m. to 8 a.m.
Yeah.
To charge it.
It was a Kia. It wasn't a Tesla. And I thought it would be like a gas station where you sit there for 5 minutes and then away you go. It said, your car will be charged in 6 hours. I'm like, what the
fuck? What are we doing? All night party in Fort Worth.
Yeah, I'm like, what are we doing here? So I just returned it.
Like a voucher or something?
I was like, go fuck yourself. I'm not doing this. And so I just returned it like uncharged. I charged it for an hour. I got like 3%. So point
that's
is,
why we need peace with Saudi Arabia.
The Saudi Arabians are going to be in power for a very long time.
So you obviously need allegiances with the oil rich countries, right? You're never going to not want that. And if the West represented in the US and Iran are not friends, Saudi would step in and be like, hey, I still have a lot of oil. So what do we need to do to make you guys like to have you continue buying our oil? Right.
Yeah. I was under the impression, though, that is there oil all around the Middle East, or is Saudi Arabia the main place? Do you guys know?
What's the question again?
Is there oil?
Not oil in Israel? I'll
like, do most countries around the Middle East have oil, produce oil, or is Saudi Arabia?
So it's actually it's the Gulf countries. So Kuwait, it's basically the Gulf, the Gulf region, whatever the sea is.
Oil.
Yeah. So it's basically any country that is on that Gulf has a lot of oil. So it's Kuwait, Saudi. Saudi is just because of the bigger by region, they have bigger coast. So they have more access to oil. But the whole thing is full of oil. So literally every country around it, so Kuwait, Qatar, Oman, Bahrain, Dubai, like United Arab Emirates. So yeah, every country on that coast is full of oil. And to your point earlier, Cap, Israel, even though, yes, not rich in oil, but not rich in resources. So try to many different ways to make alliances with countries that are trying to get access to the Mediterranean and stuff like that. So recently they've had a deal where Egypt extracts, we as in Egypt extract our gas, give it to Israel so they can sell it back to us for 10 times the price. So, you know.
Wait, what? The natural gas? There's natural gas, is that what you're saying?
Natural gas, yeah.
Sounds like a bad deal.
Why'd you make that deal?
We've been doing it for years and years. It's part of just like not being, if an Arab dictator wants to not be toppled in a US-backed democratization process, you have to agree to this. You have to agree to basically sell your oil or sell your gas or whatever to Israel for much cheaper than the actual market price. And then when you do need it for your own country, you buy it back from Israel.
Hmm. I don't know anything about that, actually. That's good deal.
What a deal.
Mubarak was on trial for that for years. It's his regime was, and we had a big scandal about it because one of his whatever close alliances, you know how it is, like usually the politician is not like signing his name on everything. So one of his close alliances, both of them are now dead. But close alliance, his name is Hossein Salim, and he had they're not dead, they're both old. Mubarak died.
Also old. That's scandalous.
So that guy, Hossein Salim, had a company called whatever blah blah East oil, and that was on trial in Egypt because he was selling the natural gas to Israel for below market price. Like you would even like even for the same like for the market price, you can sell it to other countries, and it was just bananas. And there was obviously a lot of commissions going back, like kickbacks into the Mubarak family and all of that.
Senator Bob Menendez must have been involved, but anyway,
he is back on the news in Egypt now because he is on trial again.
Yeah, that's why I brought it up. You know, but not to go off topic, but the senator of New Jersey is involved in a big scandal with the Egyptian government.
Oh yeah. I do know that they were giving him gold bar. They were bribing him with gold bars, which is literally very old, gold. Old world.
He had like a hot Egyptian wife who like her girlfriend, and she got him into this. But yeah.
Let's get back to this though. So what, I mean, if this actually goes through, and this is what's extremely interesting to me. So we've established, I think another reason, Kaplan, you had told me that, China had somehow brokered a deal.
Right. Between Iran and Saudi Arabia. I had read that they had stopped talking for years. They had like no diplomatic relations. And I guess China last year brokered a deal where Iran and Saudi Arabia resumed diplomatic relations a little. So the U.S., my understanding is, needs to get some influence again in the region.
Yes, so it's an influence tug of war, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So then the U.S. was like, well, we don't want you to be the one who brokered. If you brokered a peace deal, we're going to broker a war deal. And
pretty much.
And so then the U.S. is now the way this deal seems to stand right now, which is so interesting to me, is in exchange, I guess, for what the U.S. is getting out of this is just more influence in the region. And what they're giving up is nuclear secrets and nuclear capabilities to Saudi Arabia. We will be
Saudi Arabia would be allowed to have a civilian nuclear.
I don't know how much, based on no information, I don't know how much with that. Like would these capabilities go? Like I don't know how far they will go, and I would say comfortably that they wouldn't go anywhere because they're not gonna give a country that can very easily nuke Israel a bunch of nukes or nuclear capabilities. It's just not gonna happen.
Well, that's what I thought was interesting about it is that Israel's had nukes for a long time, and Saudi Arabia never said we need nukes because Israel has nukes. They're essentially saying to America, you've given up. You're not going to stop Iran from getting nukes. You sort of given up on that. So,
exactly.
So you need to at least give us nukes and give us like a NATO-like defense agreement that that's basically what they're saying to America.
We did skip over that part. Sorry, Cap. I think we did skip over that part, though, that a big part of this is that Iran is now building not only this thing with China, but they're also building these nukes. I don't know if we talked about that or not.
They had the nuclear deal under the Obama administration. They froze it and then they're building nukes.
They're building nukes. Saudi Arabia says, we want to build nukes. They went to America and they said, give us your nuclear capabilities. America said, okay, create a pact with Iran, with Israel, and we will. And now it seems like here we are. Kaplan, so MBS, Mohammed bin Salim, you know him. He's the guy who chopped up Jamal Khashoggi. What?
Bin Salman, not Bin Salim.
Oh, sorry. Bin Salim. Yeah. He chopped up Jamal Khashoggi. You know him.
Not personally, but yes.
The Washington Post the hit. Writer. And he now is saying that if this deal is going to happen, he would want Palestine, the region, to get some concessions from Israel, right?
Yeah, and that's where it gets complicated because Israel's government right now is not the type that's going to be in the mood for concessions. But
that's very obvious. Israel government is as right as it has been ever, pretty much, which is not great for anybody to negotiate with them because they're not going to give concessions to the Palestinians, but also Saudi is also doing this not because it's like in the best interest for the Palestinian people. They're doing this also to gain more influence. So there is now two sides. Everyone is fighting, right, in a way. So Saudi is actually fighting for influence, fighting with the UAE, who gets to lead the Middle East. The reason being, Egypt is the historical like kind of figure that has always been the head of negotiation or in the middle between the Palestinian Israelis, the Palestinians, Israelis, and the U.S., and even between the Palestinians and and Israel and like Lebanon or something. It's always been hosted in Egypt. That's why the Arab League is still in Egypt. Now, because of the sheer just mental bad, like badly, very bad mismanagement from the current regime, that role is now gone because Egypt has been borrowing money from the Gulf from the last, for the last 10 years. So much money that the, now the Gulf is like, well, we've been lending you money. And the president went on record and said, if it wasn't for the money that we got from the, our brothers in the Gulf, this country would have collapsed. So they're like, oh, well, great. You're clearly not in a position to lead anymore. So we will be the leaders. But then the Emiratis and the Saudis both want to be the leaders, which is why there is this thing where they're racing who normalizes relationships with Israel more, because that would mean that the U.S. likes you more and they will make you a leader. So that's what's happening.
But what do you actually get for leading the Arab League then? Like, what is the, what's just, the prize? Just the cachet?
We Arabs are all about ego. It doesn't matter if there is an actual prize. we just want to be the guy.
Because I get it if they're leading the league to fight Israel, because that's cool. You're leading a war. But if you're leading it...
No, but Kaplan, I sort of get it. You want to be the one that's connected to the U.S. Like, you want everything to run through you. So now you're brokering deals because you have the ear of Joe Biden and they don't, right? Or whoever the next president is, you know, Trump next or whoever.
I'm sure Trump is going to honor the... Yeah. Trump goes to the normal channels for everything.
For Ron DeSanctimonious or whatever. So it's... Yeah, but that is wild, though, that it's flipped to where now everybody wants to be... It's a competition to be friends with the U.S. and with Israel. Where did Iran go? So why is Iran going the other way? Iran, excuse me. Why are they going the other way? I didn't mean to go George Bush.
Iran is going the other way because Iran is still holding on to the idea that Israel is the enemy.
Right. Israel Satan.
America. here's the crazy part. Israel is also the enemy for everyone around there.
Right.
Including like it's just the regime that is different. So which is why also the U.S. needs to make sure that everything close in the vicinity of Israel is controlled by a regime that is supported, like that is normalizing relationships. Otherwise, it's a big problem because if you let the people just do whatever, there is no Israel tomorrow.
Right. The people don't support, like you're saying that the countries are all in charge in making these deals, but the actual people don't support Israel more.
No, the actual people don't support it.
They might even support less.
And I would say as someone from the people, I understand that too. It's not because Israel is the enemy, blah, blah, blah. It's because of the, and I think I might've mentioned this on an earlier episode with you guys, Israel has been still, so think about it as like someone who moved into a place, and this is obviously an oversimplification, but if you move into a place and, you know, you keep fighting with your neighbor or whatever, and you just both keep fighting, and then everyone else has a choice around you, the other neighbors, either to be friends with you if they see that you're right, or if they see that you're a bully, they're not going to hang out with you. And that's what's happening with the average person, is that they're seeing that there's a bully. And they're like, well, these guys are dicks. They just keep beating up the other guys all the time. And we don't want to deal with them.
Right.
Yeah. Even if we know that. Yeah, in general. Yeah.
Exactly. No, I was thinking about this over the weekend because it was Yom Kippur, which was the Jewish holiday. And I don't know if Turner, there was the 50th anniversary of the Yom Kippur War, which is like the last major war Israel had with all of Egypt obviously being the number one country.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about like that generation when everybody went in, like that was the war that Israel claimed closest to losing. So this would all be a different conversation. Turned out a little differently. But like at that point, I wonder if people for a little bit of time didn't see Israel, like viewed Israel more positively in a way then, whereas now the younger generation has come up with this because the Palestinian issue wasn't as big of an issue then.
Correct. So I think you're right. There was an opportunity back then after the Yom Kippur wars and all of that, like from the 1967 to 1973, that's when it was really bad because Israel was on the offensive trying to gain as much territory around it as possible. That's when they occupied Sinai. That's when they occupied the Golan in Syria. And that's when they occupied bits of Lebanon as well.
Right.
And then obviously the Arabs pushed back. Then there was a good opportunity around the Camp David agreement when, you could have been like, okay, guys, everyone just hold on to what you have right now. Everyone is happy. And it's one of these things, like the best case scenario out of this is like no one is happy. That's the best case scenario.
Yeah.
But right now, Israel is happy, has been happy since then. Of course.
Right. Because Israel was a much poorer. Yeah, that's true. Because like Israel back then was like not, people think of it as this like rich modern country. It is now. Back then it wasn't. Back then it was a very relatively poor country compared to like America.
Correct.
So and, yeah. And since then, economically, Israel's thrived as it's like become more of a pariah nation to other. I'm speaking. You know, but yes. So yeah, a lot of Israelis are happy in the sense that they're comfortable, like with the situation. You know, so it's become a tough. The Palestinian issue is a tough. It's become almost impossible to solve, basically. So that's I think yes. what you're getting at. Like we're almost. Well, are we almost moving past that in a way? Like,
here. Let me jump in here.
I mean,
I just have a question for both of you. Do you think that the way to solve the Palestinian issue was it seeming to me as a very outsider perspective that it was never going to be solved and will never be solved through peace, through everybody saying, hey, let's just do the right thing. And Israel, you know, let's leave and let, you know, you get it on Tuesdays. I get it on Saturdays, like a marriage or something, like a divorce.
Jerusalem. That's a great idea for Jerusalem.
Yeah.
It is a great idea for Jerusalem.
You get Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
We get it on our Sabbath. You get
Yeah. I mean, so that seemed to be never the issue.
Like when you hear,
it just feels like it's always going to be solved by ruthless people who are acting in their own self-interest, and maybe they stumble onto it, and maybe we've stumbled onto it. Maybe Netanyahu and MBS are so kind of self-interested and money. Like there's. Yeah. If there's enough money behind it, anything can happen. And right now, if Joe Biden, which seems bizarre to me, but if he's genuinely offering to nuclearize Saudi Arabia, maybe MBS goes, yeah, screw it. Then if I can get nukes, I'll be on your side, Israel. And then maybe Netanyahu's saying, yeah, if we can get access, if we can get another gigantic, like basically the biggest other partner in the Middle East, then I'll give up a little bit of Palestinian land back or something. Or is that insane?
Well, it's not insane, except that the concession that would make sense for the Palestinian people, and it's not something I'm proposing. It's something that like every time this conversation comes up, they always say the same thing, by the way. The Palestinian demands have never changed, pretty much. They have always been the borders before 1967. Has right. always been that.
And that was the Saudi Arabia, the Arab Peace Initiative, right? Like in 2002.
Correct.
They said, like, we'll make peace with Israel if, and they go back to the pre-67 borders, essentially, right?
Correct. Yeah. That's exactly it. And this is, I'm knowing, you know, as again, just one of the people, not a politician and not related to the politician, nothing will happen in this case as serious improvement as long as this is not on the table. Now, Israel on the other side says this will never be on the table. And this is why we're here.
Right.
Let me just jump in. What if Palestine is starting to one by one lose partners in the Middle East? I'm talking about governments, not talking about the people, but the government partners, if they're losing support from all these countries because the countries are now siding with Israel and the US, then does their bargaining power become smaller and smaller? Or as long as they have terrorist organizations or freedom fighters or whatever you want to call them, willing to just throw rocks over, you know, into the other side, then they still have power.
You already answered your own question. It's because Palestine does not have friends in the Middle East anymore because everyone is acting out of self-interest. I mentioned this on this podcast before. Is Palestine's worst enemy, in my opinion, is Egypt right now because they have consistently closed the borders on the Gaza. No matter how much they're getting hounded by the Israeli side, we are literally the only escape at point. And I'm not saying open up the borders, let them all move to Egypt. I'm saying, you know, even sometimes when there is airstrikes, raids, you know, schools getting blown up and everything, and people are on the border dying, and we're supposed to open up the borders as per the treaties to let them get treated in Egypt. We don't open up the border sometimes because sometimes you just Israel goes, no, don't open it now. And we don't have our own will anymore because we're too weak.
Hasn't Jordan been a close second, though, as far as not a friend of the Palestinians as well over the years? I mean, they've...
But that's the point. Like, Palestinians don't really have friends right now. So it's one of these things, like, how much worse can it get? And this is why the terrorists come in, because the terrorists are like, hey, guys, we can do something. You guys are fucked anyway. Well, that's, so why not just try?
And that's the thing, like, in the Arab countries for many years, like, wanted to have the Palestinians a cause to kind of deflect from their own. So they paid lots of money. You know, Palestinians still in Lebanon and other, and they live in, like, they call them technically refugee camps. They've been 70-year-old refugee camp, you know, like, and they could have, with all the money, and the Lebanese, and they could have, like, been put into their societies, you know, but they didn't want, and maybe not saying the issue would go away, but at least the part of the right of return issue, which is another complicated negotiation. People might not want to move back if they actually were part of a country, you know. So, but the Arab countries have always wanted this kind of issue to be there to kind of stoke people's hatred for the West, hatred for, you know. So now they're kind of trying to turn it around, and they're saying, no, now we're friends with the West. Now we want to be friends with Israel. So I can understand this isn't going to be an easy sell both, because I think I read 2% of Saudis support normalizing, or young Saudis support normalizing relations with Israel. Obviously, it's not a democracy, but, you know, it's not going to happen overnight where people are going to be like, oh, now we love Israel and we're going to take their side. Yeah. So,
and I mean, no one doesn't want everyone to live in peace. It just, like, as I said, like, right now, I think it has to be, we all have to aim for, like, no one is happy, but, like, no one is very unhappy, you know?
Yeah. And Saudi, I guess part of any deal, Saudi Arabia would give a lot of money to the Palestinians. That's part of the,
which is, again, maybe it would make them unhappy, which is great. You know, that means they also get to be unhappy like the rest of us.
Well, would money mean you give billions of dollars to whoever the government might be, and then the government just pockets it, and now they live in castles?
That's part of the Palestinian issue always been. Yes.
Yeah.
Palestinian authority. Honestly, Arafat was a very rich man.
Yeah. That's the way it usually works in most places. I went to Cuba one time, and I can tell you that Fidel Castro lives very well in communist Cuba.
I mean,
or did.
I left Egypt in 2012, and that you can Google that, very easy to verify. One Egyptian pound, one US dollar was about between five and six Egyptian pounds. Today it's about 40 in the black market.
Wow.
So you're talking about 10 years basically. But the point I'm making is that while the economy has clearly tanked because of the current regime, so one of the president's contractors went, like, basically escaped the country, went to Spain, and then became a whistleblower. He went about, like, how I've been building, like, my company has been building palaces for this guy. This guy is fucking nuts. He asked for, like, crazy, like, marbles from, like, these country, like, these, like, millions and millions of dollars are poured into presidential palaces. And the president went on record when, you know, this blew up really bad. That was like 2 or 3 years ago. It blew up really bad. He went on record, he's like, yep, I am building palaces, and I will build more because they're not for me, they're for the country.
Yeah, of course.
And it's the same thing. It's the point exactly that you said, like, Castro is living really well. Yeah, it's like, and everyone went like, yeah, it's for the country. Can I go? And it's like, no.
What the fuck are you talking about? You're not building palaces for everyone. Everyone lives in a palace. It's the old Bill Clinton, everyone deserves a house.
What is the country? Only you. Like, what is the country? Like, I am the people. Can I go there? No, if you go in the vicinity, you will have an actual sniper shoot you in the head.
Yeah.
So that could be the issue.
That could be the issue. We got to take a break, folks. We are part of the World's Smartest Podcast Network. That is us. That is the Majoring in Everything podcast with Dr. Andrea Jones-Roy. That is the Political Orphanage with Andrew Heaton. And you can find all of us at worldsmartestpodcastnetwork.com. Also, let's see. What else? Is there anything else to promote? Oh, actually, Muhammad, how can the audience find you? I mean, we're going to take a break in a minute, but we might as well do this now. They don't have to wait till the end of the episode. What's the best place to follow you?
I am at the author Muhammad on Instagram. That's where I am most active. And I've been posting, just like yourself, I've been posting stand-up clips and all of that. And as we're recording, I don't know when this will come out, but...
Today.
Today will come out? Nice. Yes. Okay. So, I will be touring in Australia. So I'm doing some dates in Sydney and Melbourne. So you can, if you're listening from Australia, you can go on my Instagram, the other Muhammad, and see all the dates. And there's a link there to my website where there are also the dates and stuff. So yeah, that's what I'm gearing up for. Pretty exciting.
Find it, the other Muhammad, everybody in Melbourne and Sydney. Find him there and go check him out. All right, Kaplan. Now, a word from your local sponsor.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, we're back.
Thank you, sponsors.
Thank you very much. Also, we should have said right there
is where if you threw, I really like, actually.
If you threw in $20 a month, that would have been your ad. We would have been advertising your business.
You would have been the sponsor.
You would have been the sponsor right there. All right, so Cap, I want to ask you, because we've talked about the Arab side here for a minute, but what... If Netanyahu does make this deal and gives back, I don't know, they're talking about like, what would it be, part of the West Bank or something like that? Now they said kind of, or if he gives any concessions, what I read, if he gives any concessions, he'll lose his majority and he won't get reelected. But the other side of that, and here's what I want to ask you, your brother lives in Israel, not in the West, not
Shout
in the
out.
West Bank.
Steve Kaplan.
Steve Kaplan. Lives in the East Bank. Everybody, relax. And well,
geography wise,
I don't know.
West
North
of the
Bank,
West Bank,
South Bank. I don't know where he lives.
He's west of the West Bank. He's in Jerusalem.
Yes, anyway, point is, yeah, you're right. West of the. Why is the West Bank in the East? I don't know. Is that someone? Is that a hacky
the West
bit?
Bank of the Jordan River? No,
they got to figure that part out. Is that a bit that everyone does? And no one.
It's all relative, guys.
Yeah, it's like, all everything.
Yeah.
Anyway, so point is. If Netanyahu, say in this fantasy world, he does give some amount of concessions, they say he'll lose his majority. He won't get reelected, but will he pick up the moderates and the others? There are Israeli people who want all these concessions to happen, right? Will he be able to gain them and then still stay in office?
I mean, it would be a fascinating thing because, he will lose. He's got a very far right coalition. If you give any concessions, they even... like symbolic ones, he might lose them. I mean, they might, but yes, could he pick up moderates? He could in theory, except the moderates all hate him so much. So that's why he has this government to begin with. So I don't know.
Say that again. That's why he has this government to begin with.
He has this government to begin with because the moderates like Gantz is there. I don't need to get into the weeds of the names, but they hate him so much that they will probably rather just let it dissolve and go to election. And then on the flip side, like any support he has among, I don't even think American Jews like this deal because American Jews are very don't like Saudi Arabia, you know? So it's like, it's a very interesting deal where
what if MBS says, I will only thank you for these concessions. Now, you have to keep Netanyahu in power or else I don't know, whatever. We blow all this stuff up. What if him and Netanyahu just become best friends and they stick together? You know what I'm saying?
That would be so.
Dictators are attracted to they prefer other dictators, right?
Yes.
You have
a
democratically elected president anywhere in that region. I promise you, he's not going to make many friends.
And I would say that Netanyahu, Israel in general, I always thought is very bad at PR, which was, we have a lot of good publicists in Hollywood, Jews, but we're not good. Israel, the country, is terrible. So it would be the ultimate bad PR move if Netanyahu then decides, I'm just going to go become buddies with MBS. That would just be like a...
But that's kind of what he's doing.
Yeah. No, and I don't know. That's where I think that Israelis do like the Abraham Accords with all these countries have allowed Israelis to travel to all sorts of places they never went to before. It's brought in millions of dollars in tourism money and jobs for both, you know, the countries I was reading about. So there's definitely a benefit. I do think Israelis would welcome the idea. Like it's this of like being able to, you know, go to Saudi Arabia. They would support it in that level. They do like nobody likes being a pariah. They do like being, I think that people would like the idea of the deal, but his government, yeah, they can't give any, like, they can't give up. I don't know what concessions they could give up that he could sell to his government that they wouldn't fall apart. Cause it's a very right-wing government.
And then yeah, Mohammed, so do you think that, you know, from the US side, they're saying, well, like, well, this will be a win for Biden. If you think it's a win for Biden, they go, it's a win for Biden going into the next election because he's now brokered peace in the Middle East, right? Peace is now here. Now from, I don't know, my uninformed opinion or point of view, if you're saying we're going to nuclearize Saudi Arabia, that doesn't sound like peace. And do you think this will cause more hostility? I guess now you have Saudi Arabia and Israel and whoever else the other partners are. It's just everyone against Iran, or where does it line up?
I think, yeah, you're right. I think it will be mostly everyone against Iran, but it's also more like forced peace, which I guess is a form of peace. Like no one can really do anything after this. Yeah. Which is like, okay, Saudi have a bunch of nukes, but they're best friends with Israel. No, the people are not happy for sure. Like the people can be happy with certain liberties that they're given, which I agree with. Like, you know, people like Saudi now is a lot more modern. I was actually booked to open for Jim Gaffigan in Saudi next month or November. Yeah.
What? Yeah. My buddy, Jim Gaffigan.
We just have dinner with performing him in Saudi Arabia. Yeah. What is he on, the Live Golf Tour?
Well, the tour was Cairo, Dubai, and Saudi. And actually, unfortunately, the whole tour got canceled. And his agents managed email and saying like, sorry, guys, we can't do this tour. They didn't give a reason. And that's it. But the point is that,
I think I know the reason. It's
backlash.
So yeah, from an American point of view, it's horrible PR to do anything with Saudi Arabia right now.
That's so interesting.
I mean, the Live Golf Tour, ultimately, do you know about the Live Golf Tour, Mohammed? So there's like the PGA Tour. That's Tiger Woods. That's everybody, right? The big golf tour, professional golf. And golf then Saudi Arabia a couple years ago started their own professional golf league called LIV, and started buying U.S. golfers one by one to perform in their league
for like a ton of way more money than they would make. Yeah,
way more. They were giving people like $100 million, and Phil Mickelson was the most popular golfer who went and did it. I think Dustin Johnson did it as well, who's Wayne Gretzky's daughter is married to him. And Tiger Woods did not do it, but these golfers got like, everyone was going out to the events and booing them and screaming at them and saying, like, yelling, Jamal Khashoggi's died so you could golf and stuff like this. And so I would imagine, to be totally frank, if that, maybe the word got out that Gaffigan was going to Saudi Arabia and his fans complained or something, but which gets us back to how difficult of a deal this would be. I don't think this would be good press for Biden right now, because liberals in America hate Saudi Arabia. So any
Saudi Arabia is actually more hated than Iran to liberals, I believe. Like they don't really think about
definitely.
Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
I think you're right about that. It is personally a bummer for me because I had already written my first joke to open on this tour, because right before the date of the tour, actually, you know, the last show before the Middle East tour was supposed to happen was him co-headlining with Jerry Seinfeld.
Sure.
So I was going to open with like Jim Gaffigan's. You can tell where his career is going because his last show was with Seinfeld. Now it's with me. I was just going to make fun of myself and him for booking me. But anyway, it didn't happen.
I know. One question, Mohammed, because we talked about Iran and Saudi Arabia. Do you think, like, what is the actual fear from Saudi Arabia with Iran? Like, would they ever actually go to war? Because, I mean, we didn't mention this earlier, but this peace process began about a year ago when Saudi Arabia started letting Israel use their airspace, which they had never done, which is the underlying if Israel ever is going to do a covert mission to like bomb Iran's nuclear facilities, take them out, they have to fly over Saudi Arabia. So they have to have permission for that. So that was the first. So but does Saudi Arabia, like, are they, I know there was those rebels, right? The Houthi rebels, I guess, who like are Iranian backed, who were in Saudi Arabia. Like, what was the, like, what's the military fear, I guess?
The Houthis were, were in Yemen. They still are in Yemen. And again, Saudi does not want any Shiite influence around it. So this is why also, and I think I mentioned it in this podcast before, when the Arab Spring happened in Bahrain, the protests were also Shia people, and Saudis backed the oppression of the protests there. And it was the most violent of all of the protests in the Middle East, how badly it was crushed. And it was actually by Saudi influence slash backing slash direct intervention. It was really, really, really violent and ugly. And it didn't get much coverage, actually, because Al Jazeera at the time was kind of like one of the main outlets to cater the news to the rest of the world. And Al Jazeera was busy trying to take sides in Egypt and Tunisia. So they didn't really bother covering Bahrain. It was very bad. But the point is that, Saudi does not want Shiite influence anywhere around it. So whatever it is, it's going to crush it.
So it's influences.
Yeah, it's just influences, I think.
Right. And Iran obviously is...
Sorry, where is Al Jazeera based?
It's Qatar.
It's in Qatar. And then, okay, so do they're, I know they're independent, but like, you know, as we know, no, there's no media that's like unbiased.
So Al Jazeera is not independent, not even official. Al Jazeera is funded by the Qatari government.
That is
official.
I didn't know that. Okay. I thought there was an independent news network.
Nope.
So then is there reporting?
Qatar itself is a whole other, actually this can be a whole episode, just Qatar, because Qatar is the only country in the region that actually did not follow what the rest of the Gulf states was doing throughout the whole Arab Spring until now. Qatar sided with the Muslim Brotherhood, and there was a collective boycott of Qatar that only was released, like, that was only like solved like 2 years ago. None of the countries, Qatar was at some point, Qatar Airlines was not flying over the Gulf airspace. That's how bad it was. It was completely... There is another word. Stop. What is the word? When you... everyone just ignores you.
Like, you're banned or you're...
shunned?
I don't know.
It's kind of shunned or banned. But there is a different word that they use in the news. So anyway.
Okay.
And that's because Qatar decided and used Al Jazeera to actually defend the Muslim Brotherhood. Sometimes rightfully, a lot of the times not rightfully. But everyone else is like, yo, just get in line. You're a tiny country. Why are you doing this? And they're like, nah, we're gonna.
So Al Jazeera was not. So it's interesting. We didn't know anything about that.
Yeah. But now they're back in line. So who cares? Which, again, it was never about the cause. It's just about your interest. Because for the longest time, Al Jazeera was openly shitting on like how the current president, for example, in Egypt is, you know, corrupt, and he's like killed the Muslim Brotherhood, and he's like a killer and whatever, blah, blah, blah. And they had just like, after everyone just made peace again, they had just given, Qatar had just given Egypt like $1 million, like however million dollars in loans again, because Egypt is just like going around begging everybody. But because we were fighting with them, we didn't take much money from them. Now it's like, oh shit, a new guy. Let's get one. It's fucking nuts.
What? So, what do people think of MBS in the region? So in America, he's like an ultimate villain, right? But what is he? Yeah. Well, again, for our people, he is. For our government, they all work with him. That was the craziest thing about
the like him before that.
The craziest thing about the LIV golf tour was that everyone was shaming these golfers for taking money from the Saudi government. Meanwhile, our own government works with him all the time, and no one was shaming them.
Well, the thing with him, which is more of a personal opinion than anything, and when I spoke to Saudi friends before, when the push to open things up really happened, I caught up with Saudi friends just to kind of get like their perspective on the ground. That was like 4 or 5 years ago or whatever. So now it's more of a personal opinion than anything. I think he's a complicated character because he is doing a lot of good things. And I know now I'm saying that being very mindful that this sounds like I'm about to say something really good about someone who's horrible. right? It's always like, oh, he's
all
doing
relative. We know that, like, yeah, most of the leaders are not good people.
But genuinely, a lot of the measures he took are really good measures for the people. Because, for example, this is something that I personally witnessed. I was in a business trip in Saudi Arabia around 2014 or 15. And back then, the religious police were still legal. And I've seen it myself because actually I was working in restaurants at the time doing inspection on chain restaurants. And at the time when the prayer was happening, you actually have to close the door and kick all the customers out because no business is allowed to happen during, this is only less than 10 years ago.
Right.
And the funny thing is, like, I didn't know because I was a foreigner. I caught up pretty quickly what was happening. And then the staff explained to me that, like, we just shut the door and then, like, we smoke cigarettes inside. No one is even drinking. No one is praying, I mean.
No one's praying. Like, it's just close the blinds.
Exactly. Just close the blinds. You just smoke cigarettes, 10 minutes, and then everyone comes back. Point is, MBS realized that actually one of the worst, the worst reputation about Saudi is that kind of religious police. And he just outlawed them. And that was a good thing. Because I saw it myself firsthand that the people were very annoyed because, dude, if they want to pray, they will pray. If they don't want to pray, you're not going to force them. And I've seen it, people just going like, in fact, it was actually almost the opposite reaction when people who were kind of religious now are just annoyed by these guys and not praying just out of spite.
Out of spite. That's what I would do.
It's like,
exactly.
You ever meet the non-Mormons in Utah? Like, hate Mormons. And
right,
but everywhere else around America, we don't hate them or like, which just, they just kind of exist. We don't have an opinion one way or the other. But for the non-religious people in Utah, they say if you ever perform, you stand up in Utah at a comedy club, the Mormons won't come, most likely won't come to the show.
Rip on Mormons.
So the easiest move is the hack moves, you just rip on Mormons and everybody loves you. And then away you go.
Right. So yeah, he outlawed that religious police. We call them al-amr bil-ma'ruf wa nahy al-munkar, long name, but it basically is religious police that would go and spank you if you have long hair or, whatever.
Jeez.
Well, but he also let women drive, right? Which,
well, yeah,
is this a good thing or a bad thing?
That's what I was getting to. All right, fucking, you're turning to an 80s comic. Are women driving now? Is that good?
I mean, my wife has never driven, so I don't, yeah. She thinks we're in Saudi Arabia in my household, but
has Randy never driven a car?
I mean, no, she'll drive if we're out on the highway with nobody around. But I do all the driving when there's actual traffic.
That's crazy.
But yeah, that's a cool thing. As part of him, as for the push of him modernizing the country and stuff, he has done a lot of good things.
Yeah.
But he's also a fucking killer, right? Yeah. And this is, what are you going to do? Women
are now driving.
Yeah. Women are now driving, which is objectively cool. And you can probably see Formula One, whatever, when you don't have to fly to another country to see it. As a Saudi who is a fan of Formula, for example, that's cool. It's here now. That's really exciting. And the religious police are not annoying me about wearing shorts on the street. That's also cool.
Yeah.
But in the ascend, he also crushed everybody under no opposition. To the point that you guys probably heard of the story years ago when he got all the billionaires, the multi-billionaires of the country and put them in the Ritz-Carlton for weeks, basically as a shakedown.
Yeah.
And he was like, everyone get in line. And he shook them down for whatever the amount is, a stupid amount.
At least it was the Ritz.
Huh?
At least he put them in a nice hotel.
Yeah. He put them in the Ritz and it was also a stupid amount, but that was also being hey, I'm the only dick in this town. This is no one else. No one has any say in this anymore.
Does his father have, what is this? His father is symbolic.
Old. Yeah. He's just old and senile.
Cause I read that his father would never stand for making peace with Israel, but I guess he doesn't have any.
Yeah.
He
doesn't
have any. He doesn't have any in the matter anymore.
No, he doesn't. So, and MBS.
They won't even tell him. They won't even tell him.
It's
it
crazy.
Happened.
And MBS is literally 34, 35 years old, which is nuts. To one of the richest countries in the world. Yeah.
That's Gen Z. He's a Zoomer.
He's Gen Z. Yeah. We wouldn't even allow him to be president. He's not even 35 years old.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, you have to be 35 in America to be president. But in reality, you have to be 78.
you have to double that. Yeah. Good point.
Nice. Yeah.
What do you guys think? Let's end here. And you can go one by one. From your perspective, Mohammed, you take the Middle East perspective. Kaplan, you take the Israel perspective. You think that this will happen? That this deal, factoring in all the issues, do you think it'll happen? Cap, you go first.
Yeah, no, I think it's going to happen because there's a lot of realpolitik involved. These people are very pragmatic. It seems like they're pushing towards it. The Israeli foreign minister, one of the Israeli, the travel minister, was the highest ranking Israeli to ever set foot in Saudi Arabia, set foot
tourism.
Yesterday.
Yeah.
So it seems like it's tourism minister. Yeah, big deal. Big get. It seems like it's going to happen. It is, on all joking aside, exciting from a Israeli perspective, I guess, that making peace with Saudi Arabia. It's wild. I wanted to, maybe Mohammed could answer this, because my dream is of a day, not just of peace in the Middle East. We all want peace in the Middle East, but I dream of a day when Israel will be allowed to compete in soccer in the Middle East region. So they have a chance to make the World Cup, because they have to be in Europe right now, because the Arab countries will never play them. So if you ever see like a sumo wrestling match, or some random international event, when Israeli makes it against an Iranian or something, they'll just forfeit, and the Israeli make it all the way to the finals if they get the right draw. So I dream of a day in soccer, though, when Israel can be in the Middle East region. Can that happen with this deal, Mohammed?
I think it's actually, you're saying this jokingly, I imagine, and this is actually
a little bit of truth.
Yeah, no. What I'm saying is that your dream is actually could be much closer than you think. Because in the push of the normalization with the relationships with Israel, everything goes. And if you're talking about football as like something that is so far-fetched, it's actually not. Like, it's just a matter of time. But here's a problem. As I said earlier, this can officially happen. The governments can force, the people or the national teams to compete against Israel, because that's the government. They're making the call. But the people are never going to be happy. And every single time there is, because sometimes we do compete on Olympic level or whatever, it can be like an Algerian player, like a wrestling player against an Israeli player. And every time it happens and, an Arab player wins, it's such a big deal. And it's not because they won, it's because they beat the Israeli guy, because that's what the people want.
Right. It's good. It's the ultimate heel.
Yeah.
So that should be that's,
they should have a Middle East version of Harlem Globetrotters, where they just like they an Israeli team just goes around like they're like the Washington Generals.
They just get paid
to just go lose everywhere. It'd be so popular.
Omri Kasperi can play in that team.
You'd sell out stadiums. Yeah. But Mohammed, do you think this deal can happen? What do you think?
I think it will happen. It's not a matter of is going to happen or not. It will happen in the push for. Normally, like for MBS to basically, he fucked up obviously by killing Jamal Khashoggi. Yeah. So now he's also like, whatever, like he wants to gain that. He just did an interview with like the New York Times or whatever as well. One of the 60 Minutes, whichever one of them. And he's like on a big PR push to be like, hey guys, do you like me again?
And he had a good young.
The question is, when he did the interview, did he then kill them? After the interview, are they
funny still enough, he's like, I promise,
a good guy now, but you are gonna die.
Yeah, I haven't killed a journalist in 5 years.
When he was asked about it, he just said like the bullshit of like, oh, there's some guys who are kind of out of line, and we totally put them in trial, and we are a country that respects the law, and blah blah blah, and it's like actually. I'm pretty sure reports out of Saudi saying that these guys are not just like, not even like there is a sham trial going on,
sure.
But like these guys are literally just walked like nothing happened actually.
Yeah. And I would say if I'm allowed to take, Kaplan, we can both take the American perspective, but
you
I guess
take
we can
the
kind
Gentile
of
side, you know,
I'll take the Gentile side. The Gentile. I would say if Biden, I think it's going to be one of those stories that Americans are very self-centered and pretty ignorant to the world. And so that's why I think this deal will happen, because I think for a day or two, these like far left liberals, the Joe Schaefer types will hate.
Shut up.
They'll hate Biden. But then 2 days later, they'll figure out who to cancel next. And, somebody will have said the wrong thing in the news. And that'll be the new enemy. So they're the enemy of the left doesn't last long. They kind of chew you up and spit you out within a day or two. And then they have to get their next news story in. So Biden, yes, they will hate him for a couple of days for have made a deal with Jamal Khashoggi, but then they'll move on. And my evidence of that is the LIV golf tour that I keep going back to about a couple months ago, partnered with the PGA. So that LIV golf tour doesn't exist anymore. They merged with the PGA. And these people who were previously boycotting and protesting LIV golf are not, they don't care anymore. They're not protesting the PGA. It's literally the same company now. It's just bigger. And they've kind of moved on with their lives. So I think that Biden, probably his advisors know that. And they know they'll hate us for a couple of days and then they'll be fine.
And you make a good point, because the left, it's almost like what unites Israel and Saudi Arabia is this like left wing worldwide hatred, but dislike. But I think Biden doing it adds legitimacy. Like if Trump did this, it would just going hand in hand with all that. It just would be like, oh, this is such a shady deal. Israel, Saudi Arabia, Trump. But with Biden doing it, it's the only way to make this actually, because Biden came into office calling Saudi Arabia a pariah. So Biden actually making this deal, it's like when Nixon went to China kind of thing. Like it's.
Yeah, and
it actually might make it like a real deal that actually carries some weight.
And the other thing is, like, Biden is old. He's incredibly old. So I know he wants to get reelected, but it comes down to, do you want to get reelected or do you want to do something that could change the world? You know, this it's a gigantic deal. So it's like historically in the history books, you'll go down as the guy who did it. You might lose the next election, but he might lose the next election anyway. He might be dead by the next election. I mean, he might, you know.
That's a lot of
he might be in a nursing home
by the next election.
Like anything could happen, right? So okay, I think we're gonna leave it there. That was great, Muhammad. Thank you for doing the show. Everybody go see check out the real Muhammad on Instagram.
The other Muhammad. No, the real Muhammad will get me in trouble. It's the other Muhammad.
Not the real Muhammad.
You'll get him killed.
Oh boy.
The ultimate cancellation.
Yikes. The other Muhammad on Instagram.
Yes, please don't get me in trouble.
And goes, I didn't mean that was on purpose. And go see him in Australia, Kaplan. That's it. What should we do?
You should follow me at the other Moses. And in the meantime,
I'm the other
get
Jesus.
Lost. Shalom.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.